SES, you'll start off.
Hi, this is Carl McCartan. Today is September the 7th. We are conducting an interview of Mark Kemp. With me on the FCI side is Al Crago, Claire Moraine, and we have Wilmer Hale at Bank of America, and of course Mark Kemp on the call. Mark, we wanted to talk to you today. As you know, we were formed by an act of Congress of May of last year, the Fraud Enforcement and Recovery Act, formed to study the causes of the financial crisis. And one of the areas that we're examining is residential lending, the role of mortgage lending, and to some degree securitization in the financial crisis. So we wanted to speak to you, and we appreciate you taking time out to have this conversation with us today.
You bet.
So if you could, could you please summarize your education and work history following college?
My education was in mass communications, journalism, minor. I graduated in 1978. I worked in a separate industry outside the financial service industries for a number of years, and was switched over to banking in 1983. I think I was hired by Coldwell Banker Mortgage.
Where did you attend university? I'm sorry, I don't know if I...
University of Northern Colorado.
Okay. Thank you.
And I was hired as a salesperson, as a loan officer. And I worked for them for a couple of years out of Denver. And then they transferred me in 1987 promoted me and transferred me to the Bay Area, the San Francisco Bay Area in California. I worked for them for about 3 years, and then, well, let me back up. I think I'm just trying to, it was a long time ago, so some of those dates may not be completely accurate, but I worked as a loan officer, a market manager. Worked for Boston Safe Deposit and Trust as a loan officer, American Savings Bank as a branch manager, and then Fleet Savings Bank as a manager and district manager. And then in 1996, I was hired by Countrywide as a regional manager. And I worked for them up until April of this year, when I left so I hope that gives you a little background.
Mr. Kemp, can we ask you, when you were a regional manager for Countrywide, sir, what part of the country was that in? Is that the West Coast?
Yes, San Francisco.
Okay, and what territories did you cover as regional manager? Or what states?
Originally was San Francisco. It changed over the years with added responsibilities and more responsibilities, more geographic territory. But fundamentally, when I started, it was San Francisco Bay Area.
So no other states that encompassed that area, just California and Northern California at that?
At that time, yes.
Okay. And then how did that change over time?
They gave me Central California at one point in time, which moved all the way down to Bakersfield, and then across to Santa Barbara. And so I handled all of Northern California, from Santa Barbara, Bakersfield, north to the Oregon border. And then I was promoted to, then they realigned. I'm trying to be accurate here. They realigned at one point and gave me part of Southern California. and I had part of the San Bernardino County, what they call the Inland Empire, added to my territory.
That's a big territory.
It was a lot, yeah.
Around when was the Southern California added to your territory?
Southern California was added to my territory right after, I want to say the first part of 2001. And then around 2003, 2003, I was asked to oversee while they did a search for a new regional for Nevada. And so on an interim basis, I was given the responsibility of Nevada, Northern California, and they included Hawaii. But Hawaii, I think, started a little bit later.
How long did you have responsibility for Nevada and Hawaii in addition to California?
From that point on, I had responsibility all the way up until 2009. Early part of 2009.
Were any other territories added in the interim between 03 and 09? Or did
yes, Reno.
Reno?
Reno was added. It belonged to Reno. Another region was given to me. I was promoted to a divisional. And that's when I, as a divisional versus a regional, then I was given all of those areas that I just characterized, Hawaii, Nevada, Reno, Sacramento.
Okay. What was your title?
San Francisco and Hawaii. Divisional. Divisional manager.
Okay.
Executive Vice President, Divisional Manager. EVP.
Can you discuss, Mr. Kemp, what particular loan products drove origination in your region, if you could speak to that? Any particular loan products?
Well, the majority of our loan programs were, they were for the most part, all of our loan programs were out of the GSEs, Fannie and Freddie, and to a certain extent, HUD and VA. Not a lot of VA loans, so some in the Bay Area, some in Hawaii. And then we did a small percentage of our business in jumbo.
So would you characterize that all of the origination was for sale to those GSEs you mentioned, and none of the origination was for portfolio for the bank?
Well, none of it for the bank. I don't believe we held anything for the bank, but I'm not clear on that. I think our disclosure stated 98% or so, 98.8% or some number. It changed from year to year.
Uh-huh.
But in our disclosures, we actually disclosed the percentage of loans we sold to secondary.
Okay.
So how did you said the percentages changed over time? You know, let's just focus on 2003 forward. You know, just from some work we've done here, it seems that that's when Wall Street started to step up and be a purchaser of mortgages alongside the GSEs. And I was wondering, did you notice that in your business, and how did that kind of affect your business and as far as loan products and types and all that?
Average sales price in my marketplace, generally speaking, especially as it, on a broad sense, it's obviously all those geographies are characterized were vast and varied. So Santa Barbara, the average sales price, might be $565, whereas Lancaster, Palmdale might be $185. But the majority of my marketplace, the average loan balance was around $230,000. On a blended basis, it maybe got up to maybe 250, 256, 265, perhaps towards the end of my career. But for the most part, those fell well within Freddie and Fannie guidelines, and that's who we sold to.
So you aren't selling any loans to the street, or is that not a what percentage were going to, to Wall Street instead?
How much of?
Of your origination.
If you know.
I don't know exact percentages. I can say that 90% of our business was GSE, Fannie Freddie, HUD, VA.
And you would say that 90%, that 90% was pretty consistent over time?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not sure I understood your question.
Well, so from just from looking at internal documents, whatever, we can tell that there seems to be an increase in loans sold to Wall Street, firm-wide, countrywide. And I was wondering if, kind of from like 2003 onward, and I wanted to know if you was that 90% from 96 to when you left, or basically, if you can characterize between 03 and 09. Well, 03 and 08, when, did that percentage of loans sold to Wall Street, is 10% a kind of accurate guess for that period?
I honestly can't answer that.
Okay.
What I can tell you is that our underwriting guidelines were written specifically so that we could sell to Fannie or Freddie, so that we had the option. Provided us with the option to be able to choose either of those two agencies. And our guidelines were written with whoever had the most rigorous guidelines. Our underwriting guidelines would match Freddie if they were more rigorous, or if Fannie got more rigorous, then we would switch to Fannie's guides so that we could sell to either agency at any point in time.
Well, you could sell to either agency at any point in time. The most of your originations were sold to Fannie Mae. Would that be correct?
No, I don't know. No, I wasn't in servicing. I was just characterizing the way it was explained to me.
What?
And the way I explained it to the field.
Let's back up just a little bit. Can you kind of give me, just so I can ask you, get a better sense of your role as a divisional manager, for the reason you were covering, what was your job duties and responsibility?
I was responsible for managing the quality and the quantity of the sales activities of the sales force, and growing our sales force and growing our market share as a result of garnering more business.
Who did you report to?
Reported to Dan Hansen.
What was his
different
title?
People. There was a number of different people. during that time frame, Dan Hansen was the EVP. He had the same title as I did, EVP of the West.
And you said it changed over time. Was he your direct supervisor for throughout the 2003 to 2009 time frame, or did it change?
No, it changed. Tom Hunt became the EVP of the West when Dan was promoted to National Sales Director. So it was Tom Hunt who I reported to.
And I'm sure there were several, but can you give us a high level of who your direct reports were and what their titles were?
Yes. I had regional managers that reported to me. I had two in the Bay Area, one in the Inland Empire. Oh, I'm sorry. One in, let me cover Northern California first. Two in the Bay Area, one in Sacramento that covered the Central Valley, one that covered Nevada, including Reno, and then they had area sales managers reporting to them. And the branch managers there in turn reported to the area sales manager.
Ask about deteriorating underwriting standards? Or
yeah. Were you responsible that any folks from a wholesale or correspondent lending units report to you? Or were they just
no.
Branches?
No, they did not report to me. We had that Countrywide was a three-legged stool, is the best way to describe it. We had wholesale, correspondent, and then retail.
Gotcha.
All separate. All reporting to different hierarchies.
Okay. And now I think we...
And there was one more, which was a full spectrum.
Okay. As far as originations go, can you go into any specific loan products that really drove originations for the areas that reported to you? And what I mean by that is... you know, if you could focus on some of the hybrid arms, any hybrid arms in particular that may have driven originations for you that were either passed on to the GSEs or to other purchasers.
Well, I'd have to try and recall interest rate charts, but interest rates... dictate when people take out adjustables as opposed to going with fixed. So as rates are going up, people oftentimes will choose intermediate fixed, which are fixed for 3 years and then they revert to a one-year adjustable, or the hybrid, or those hybrid arms you're describing. So a 3, 5, and 7, depending upon your price point.
I'll be specific. How about interest-only arms and pay option arms? And the reason I mentioned those is because the documents that we've seen show very high growth of those products in 2004 and 2005 and 2006. And we know, of course, what happened to those products.
Well, the only people that had those originally was, that was quite a bone of contention with the sales force, was WAMU. Had the only it's escaping me now. The option arm, where they have different payment options and the loan could go negative.
Right.
The pay option arm. It became available in the secondary market, and we began to sell that product. And so that was a piece of our business, but not a substantial piece of our business.
Now, you're saying that it was a bone to pick with the sales force, is that they wanted
to be able to offer the product, or what was that?
Yes, consumers were asking for it, and our competition had it, and we didn't.
And so what steps were taken to kind of to launch that product?
I don't know, other than that it was announced that we were going to get it.
Where did that come from? Where did that announcement come from, and kind of when, if you can remember?
I can't remember when, but it came through product development.
Through product development.
Would it have been before 2003 or after 2003, if you can recall? Just a general range of date of time.
That sounds about right.
As far as underwriting standards go, where were those determined? Did you have responsibility for setting those, or did those kind of come from headquarters as well?
Those came from product development headquarters.
Did you notice any widening over time? I'm looking at from 2004 onwards to narrow down the time period. Did you notice any, you know, that some loans were going through them? I mean, just any widening in credit standards in general, either from, you know, internally, and let's do internally first, and then we'll talk about the GSEs.
Well, I specifically remember. I can't remember the specific date, but I remember listening to George Bush say that we're going to lend $440 billion. I thought that was an awfully big number. by 2006, and I thought that was an awfully big number at the time. But to answer your question more specifically, I don't think our standards broadened over time necessarily. I think I don't recall ever seeing, as a matter of fact, and I think we are talking about Nevada in specifics, are we not?
Sure.
Or are you just speaking generally?
Well, I'm just speaking generally right now, but we can get into Nevada specifically in a little bit. But yeah, I'm just from 2004.
Yeah,
I mean, based on the documents we've seen, just kind of if you look at average FICO scores and CLTV, there seems to be, you know, a deterioration in credit quality from around 03 forward. And so I was wanting you to comment on that.
Well, once again, you know, product parameters, whether there was a FICO change and a drop in it, a FICO or a loan to value, those would come from corporate, and there in turn we would, you know, we would sell what we had. I don't know how else to describe it.
Right. Now, did corporate set your market share goals? How did that interaction work?
Well, we didn't have market share goals.
Okay.
Although we did have an overriding or overarching a goal to be the premier residential lender and to lower the barriers of home ownership, to make home ownership available to as many Americans as possible, provided they're creditworthy.
But you're saying you didn't notice a slip in the creditworthiness of some individuals that received loans from 04 forward?
I didn't originate at that point in time, nor would I be responsible for rolling those guidelines. That would be a branch manager's responsibility if we had an market share opportunity to go out and grab market share as a result of a credit easing, which is sounds like what you're asking.
Right. How would you, so you said, you know, one of your main goals is to increase, well, not one of your functions is to increase the sales force and try to increase market share, which makes sense to me, but how, what ways did you try to increase market share? What were some of the ways that you would achieve that?
By recruiting good loan officers, and by establishing strong relationships with our referral sources. So recruiting good people, making sure they're trained properly and well, that they execute on the promises that we make from a service standard standpoint, and then growing, making sure that they are actively engaged in business development activities, which produce good, solid referral relationships.
Was there any competing on price or loan terms?
Well, my operating philosophy on price and product is kind of old-fashioned and has been for a long time, and that is that if I had the best price or the best parameters, then I wouldn't need good salespeople.
Right.
So I never listened to a large extent. I never really listened to those levels. If there was noise from the field, I would not dwell on it. Now, to be clear, if I, as a responsible executive, if I heard a lot of competitive complaint, I would get engaged, dig in, and find out who it was that we were competing against or losing market share to. And from time to time would, you know, learn who that was, and if it was a portfolio lender like Bank of America or Wells Fargo, recognize and realize that they're probably holding it for their own corporate investment purposes, and help my people understand that. And then have them focus on the products that we did have to sell to Fannie and Freddie. Sell what we have.
So you think it's... One of the things we've heard, you know, we've spoken to some people, and one of the things we heard about was a matching strategy. Did you ever come across that when you were at Countrywide?
Matching.
So, you know, you kind of match what products are available in the market. You try to match prices that were in the market. That was more, you know, that's what...
We had a... Yes. That was called the Structured Loan Desk. So to answer your question, yeah, I believe it was called the Structured Loan Desk.
Okay. And they sort of got a sense of where the market was and tried to introduce Countrywide's version of whatever these products were. Is that who?
That's correct.
Okay. Another thing that we noticed looking through the documents is that there seems to be an explosive origination growth between...
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that part.
Oh, from looking at the documents from 2004 onwards, there seemed to be an explosive origination growth, and I wanted you to comment on what you think the factors behind that growth in loan origination were in the region that you covered.
Well, there were probably two primary ones. Obviously, we had a descending interest rate market. And so as a result, that propagated, you know, obviously people investing in real estate.
Not in the middle of 04.
We also had the dot-com bubble burst and the dot-com reduction, so people ended up taking their money out of the stock market and started buying investment property. And Nevada, in particular, seemed to be a almost a resort, sort of end resort, sort of locale.
Right.
And so, as a result, I think a lot of investment occurred. A lot of people began investing in properties in Nevada because, as everyone believed at the time, that real estate could only go up, right?
Right.
And people believed that, and so they invested their money there. And so we saw an increase in investor activity would be one area, coupled with a population explosion that began to occur also in Nevada, or rather rapid growth in terms of population. It was the fastest growing city, in, I think, in the nation through some of those years that you're characterizing.
I'm sorry, so, was this Reno or Las Vegas, Mr. Kemp?
Las Vegas.
And was there a particular loan product that these investors gravitated towards? Like, would they all pick fixed rate loans, or would they all pick adjustable rate loans, generally speaking? And what variant of adjustable would they migrate to if they picked adjustable, if you can recall?
I can't recall. I can tell you. I can tell you that investors want to, by their very nature, want to pay as little as possible on a monthly basis. So that would lead me to conclude that interest-only loans would probably be a loan program that's fairly popular.
What about pay options?
Yes, that would be a guess on my part. That's what my instinct tells me.
Where would you say, just rough ball, I mean, this is a guess, you know, looking at 04 forward again, what percentage of kind of new loans were investor properties versus ownership properties in Nevada? In Las Vegas, let's just say in Las Vegas area. Or did you notice an increase in that, and can you quantify that increase?
I did notice an increase. And it did create concern in my mind. Just having a broader sensibility and having responsibilities over a larger geographic area to see the number of investors invest in Las Vegas, you know, did create some concern for me. And even beyond concern, I can remember disassociating ourselves with a joint venture partner who was selling a disproportionate percentage of their homes to investors.
What do you remember the name of the JV partner?
You know, I do not, but I can get it for you.
That'd be great.
I can get it for you, but I don't remember the name of the partner.
Around what time?
I do remember. Okay. Yeah, I do remember another partner that I can remember, and that was MGM. The MGM Condotel Projects.
And you terminated your relationship with them because of what?
No, I never pursued. I thought they pursued us vigilantly to become one of their lenders, and I was not a fan nor a champion of that, nor would I attempt to escalate that as a request of the senior management for product development needs.
Around what time do you remember, about what time period are we discussing right now? Around when was this?
2005, 2006.
Did you ever communicate this to anyone above you in Countrywide, your concern over these investor properties?
Yeah.
To whom did you?
I had John Richardson, who was the head of the builder division, with me at that particular meeting where I limited the amount of our exposure with that builder. I also had Michael Brown, who was the head of our builder division, with us at that meeting. Let's see who else was there. John Stewart was there, who was the head of the joint venture group, was also there.
Can you recall if the concerns were elevated elsewhere in the company to other executive levels or risk managers within Countrywide?
No. You mean do I know of any? No. In this circumstance, those people were the heads of those groups.
And can you recall if other regional or division managers shared the same observation that you made, that there was a rising preponderance of investor type finance requested in high growing MSAs?
Yes. Andy Stewart, my regional in Nevada, escalated those concerns to me.
What's his name again?
Andy Stewart.
Okay.
He was the regional responsible for Nevada.
And all these conversations took place in the mid-2005 is when you were having these meetings, or?
Mm-hmm.
Was there a reduction in the amount of investor property loans that you would have, that you originated after these meetings, or what would you carry?
Yes.
Okay. But then, let's just go back to the GCs for a second. Were they purchasing these? Did they ever raise any concerns about the type of loan quality product you were originating or selling to them? Or did you notice a kind of widening of their acceptable product and guidelines?
Well, there's two questions there.
Right, sorry.
The first one, yeah, it's all right. The first question was, if you could segregate those out for me, then I'll address each one.
Sure. So one is, say from 2004 onward, did you notice a widening in the products that Fannie and Freddie would accept from Countrywide? And did that affect volumes in those products?
As I stated before, I, not being an originator, not knowing whether or not guidelines had become looser, it's not a good phrase, but less rigorous, it's difficult for me to answer your question with certainty.
Okay.
I was not responsible for interacting with customers, nor was I part of any product development group. Nor did I interact with secondary market or Fannie or Freddie.
Okay.
Did you set goals for the sales force? For your sales force?
We had an overarching goal, which I described before, but nothing that you would... it was about growing from year to year. So if we had a 6% market share in retail market share under my responsibility throughout my division, we would put a stretch goal in there of a 2% market share gain. As an example, And it would be based on an estimate of what the market depth would be. For instance, if you would determine that it was a $1.1 trillion purchase market, and those numbers would come down from finance, and you had 6% of, let's say, Las Vegas's retail market share, you may determine that a reasonable goal through growth and continued development of your sales force and referral sources, a reasonable goal might be, you know, 1.5 or 2% growth over the next year. So that's the methodology we would use.
But as far as executing those goals, would there be any emphasis on a product or emphasis on a certain borrower?
No. No.
It would be a function, of course, of what the market was demanding for a given product type, right? So, in other words, if there's a rush of folks that want to minimize their monthly payment with a certain product type, that demand would drive, or that desire would drive the demand for the type of product that Countrywide was pumping out with its sales force. Would that be fair characterization?
No.
No?
We weren't that granular. What we would do is every year in forecasting for the next year, and it would be a forecast for what our market share would look like. We would look at the availability, what we believe the market share or the depth of the opportunity was for the next year. And then we would do purchases and refinances, but we wouldn't narrow it down by product type.
Gotcha. Was there a particular quarter and year that you recall where the market share, where the goals for market share would have become increasingly onerous for you? And
no.
That it would slow down? Any point in 2007 or 2008 that you can recall?
What would slow down, I'm sorry?
The originations. Like as the market started to deteriorate, the residential mortgage market started to deteriorate, was the calculation of your goals for market share, did that become conflicting with the general market conditions?
I don't understand the question. I'm not trying.
We all see data that in 2007, residential mortgage delinquencies, both prime and subprime, started to deteriorate. In your role as being the divisional manager in charge of the quality and the quantity of the sales force and market share, in that role, Because of the condition in the market, did that impede your ability to achieve your goals?
Yes.
Okay, and can you discuss what led up to it? What led up to this concern or conflict in achieving the goals, and what strategies you took to navigate through that time period?
Can you break that down too? There are a lot of questions in there, I think.
Sure. If you want, I'll go back. In 2007, the residential mortgage market started to deteriorate significantly in terms of delinquency rates for prime and subprime. In his role as leading the origination force and in his role of trying to increase market share, how did market conditions conflict with his overarching goals? First question. And number two, what steps did he take to navigate through that time period?
Well, the best way I can characterize my responsibilities when people are not buying houses, you're mixing two elements that I'm, or one element that I'm not involved with, and that was I was on the origination side, not on the servicing side. So if
So he's there originating irrespective of how it's going to perform?
To that extent, I had no knowledge of that.
Wait, hold on. Are you saying you had no knowledge that loans had began to default? Or you had no knowledge of...
Not specifically. Yeah.
I mean...
To answer your question.
So I just want to make sure we get this point right. Did you ever track delinquencies, or did you ever track loan performance as
the company did? Yeah,
but in your capacity
rarely
as leading the sales force, were you aware of how certain mortgage products were performing?
No, I was not.
It's okay, Mr. Kemp.
So your question was, was I given information on delinquency rates?
Uh-huh.
In general?
Right. At any time. I mean, yes. Did you get any regular reports? Did you get any performance data about the loans that you and your sales force was originating?
We had, the answer is no. There were not regular reports. From time to time, there would be, we had a normal audit process, both scheduled and unscheduled, and from time to time it was my responsibility, my role in that audit was to ensure that the branch manager was aware that there was a loan or a loan being audited, and to complete the required analysis necessary on their part, and ensure that the loan or the audit was completed accurately or completed. Sometimes they weren't done.
So, as part of the audit procedure, would you get information about the performance of loans your sales force was originating, or was that more about
no specific loan?
So if, this is a hypothetical, but if a particular branch was originating a high number of loans that became seriously delinquent or performed really poorly or had a high incidence of fraud, for example, is that something you would learn about?
There have been instances where that has been brought to my attention, but it was as a course of normal business. To answer your question, it's not something that was part of our normal routines and protocols.
Understanding that it wasn't part of your normal procedures and protocols, did you attend any regular meetings where other divisions would discuss that information or where that information would be introduced?
I can recall conference calls where our compare ratio, in particular with HUD, the comp ratio, was discussed. Most of the rest of the information specifically was blanked out. meaning they would give a report. It would be a spreadsheet. And the detail would be black.
When you say they, are you talking about HUD? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. And can you please describe what a compare ratio is?
Well, I'm no expert on it. However, the compare ratio is comparing us to other lenders.
So you would get a sense during those conference calls of how Countrywide held up against other lenders, but you wouldn't see the precise data about your performance or the other lenders' performance? Is that
correct?
Okay. And this would be information provided by HUD, not internally generated Countrywide data. Is that correct?
Yes.
How often would those conference calls take place?
Could say maybe in 2000 and probably in 2007, maybe once or twice. Before that, never. 2008, maybe the same number of times, twice.
Do you know what precipitated the conference calls?
It was part of a general conference call, not specifically to look at compare ratios. Just where do we stand relative to our competition?
Whether or not they were conference calls or some other meeting, did you have any similar conversations with Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac about how Countrywide compared to other originators?
No.
And were you aware at all about well, we've seen in documents that Countrywide accounted for the largest number of seriously delinquent loans that Fannie Mae held. And is that something that you knew about, or?
No. Okay. No, I've never heard that before.
Would that surprise you?
Yes.
Was there any point in 2007 that you can recall where you were asked to slow down originations? And if so, what were the circumstances for that?
No.
So, as far as you can recall, the beginning of 07 was the same as the end of 07 as far as originations?
You mean as far as his requested, whether he's requested to slow down originations?
Correct.
I can't ever remember being asked to. I can remember that products were becoming limited. So by default,
you said
originations would.
You said products were becoming limited?
Yes.
Do you remember what products and? Where first of all, where did that order come from, the limit of the products that you were, and then two is what products, if you can recall, for example?
You're going to have to ask that one more time.
Sure. One is, you said certain products were starting to be eliminated in 2007. Where did that order come from? Like, how was that communicated to you? And then two, which products were being scaled back during that time period?
Well, I can't recall specific products. I know that what would occur, how it would normally occur, would be I would get a phone call from my regional saying, you know, the loan-to-values on a particular program have been increased, meaning instead of 5% down, now we're 10% down. Were you aware of that? And I would say, no, let me look at the bulletin. And to answer your second question is, I would look at the bulletin and find out, you know, why that was, or engage in a conversation with Dan Hansen or someone, one of my peers, if they knew why this was occurring. And then I provide feedback back to the regional as to what was going on based on that, what I found out.
Comp exceptions. No.
Yeah.
Go. Switching gears a little bit, can you describe how the compensation of your sales force was tied to the goals that you set for the sales force?
It was not. Goals, there's no immediate tie-off between goals and compensation.
Is there any?
They were paid on units and paid on volume.
Were they paid on type?
No.
So can you give an example? Of how comp was structured? You had two sales agents.
Yes, okay, sure. It was tiered. So that if you did three units, three loans, and say $500,000, you would be paid 45 basis points. And I think it scaled up to 60. But it changed every year, the compensation plan.
So you're getting paid for units produced?
Units or dollars, whichever.
And how was the 60 basis points earned? How was the incremental 15 basis points received by the agent?
What incremental?
You mentioned 45 basis points up to a tier of 60 basis points, correct?
Oh, the more volume?
Yeah.
The more volume you did. Yes, it was tiered, as I said.
So what would you need to do to get to 60 basis points versus the 45?
It would depend upon which year you were asking, and I don't have that in front of me, nor do I recall. But that's how it worked.
So it's a tiered volume system. Like if I sell 10,000, if I do 5,000 originations, I get 45 basis points. If I do 10, I get 55, and if I, it's kind of
correct.
Okay.
Just come.
How is your compensation tied, Mr. Kemp?
My compensation was...
In what period?
2004 to 08.
How about if we just take 2004 to 2005? If you can recall.
I can't, honestly. We'd have to get in touch with HR and pull up PeopleSoft and look at it.
Is there a more recent period? I'm sorry, is there a more recent period that you would recall how compensation was granted for you?
I can recall the most recent with Bank of America.
I mean, were you given a performance review at the end of the year to determine your bonus? And if
it was a combination of a number of elements, very complex. It was a combination of goal, which made up maybe 20% of your compensation. Another percentage was made up of profit, how you did relative to profit goals. That might make up another 20%.
I guess people want this room. We're almost done.
You were paid. Then there was an area of corporate what I can only describe as corporate citizenship. And then finally, I think the last percentage, I think I'm still only up to 80%, but had to do with dollars, volume. Oh, your review, your annual review, maybe. And then there was a piece that they just was fully discretionary.
So as part of that review, would delinquencies, loan performance, or fraud be a consideration at all?
With Bank of America and with Countrywide, we had a quality grade. And the quality grade did have an effect on your overall performance and your pay. And the quality grade was based on those audits we described in a thing called SUS, severe unsatisfactory. And the number of SUSs as a percentage of your total volume delivered. Both targeted and random. So it looked at random numbers, at random audit numbers, and it looked at targeted numbers. The targeted numbers were a result of branches that kind of behind the scenes and behind my knowledge base were a result of a branch potentially delivering a poorer level of quality than their peers.
Understanding that this is a large time frame, so it may be difficult to recall specifics. Do you have any sense of whether or not the number, that quality grade changed over time?
Do you mean, let me see if I can clarify, that the quality decreased?
Sure. So, for example, was the quality different in 2007 or 2008 versus 2003 or 2004?
Yes. Yes, it did. And yes, I got paid less.
And what were the factors behind your quality grade being lowered? What was the reason given for your quality grade being lowered?
A full range of determinants, but fundamentally they had to do with severe unsatisfactory audits, EPDs, early payment defaults, FPDs, first payment defaults, and insurable and uninsurable loans.
So in response to those classifications received that were a function of EPDs and FPDs, did anything change that you can recall with respect to originations?
Well, let me rephrase that. Let me answer a different. I'll answer it this way. If I had a branch that continued to show poor quality, and we kept track of the quality, both in terms of their delivery time, shipping time, deficiencies, meaning documents that should be in the file that weren't in the file. Those kinds of things that could be attributed to the sales organization, then I would the answer is I would engage with the branch managers to improve the quality of their loan applications and the delivery of the documents necessary to complete to give a complete and full underwrite and thus improve the quality of the loan.
What about exceptions? Did you guys track those as well?
I did not.
Were they tracked on a branch? We documents we reviewed have shown an increase in the amount of exception loans. So did you ever?
Okay. That was through the structured loan desk. I'm sorry, I kind of stepped on you there.
No problem.
That was a result of, that was the structured loan desk kept track of the number of loans crossing their desk on the operation side. But I would like to point out that that was not my responsibility, meaning it was centralized.
You mentioned that, you monitored you looked at the documentation received at the different branches. Did Countrywide hold it? Was there a change in the level of documentation that you would accept from, say, 2004 through 2006? Or did you notice a change on the level of?
I did not. No, once again, I'd only answer it the way I'd answered it before. I didn't originate loans, and so it wasn't clear on, what would replace, for instance, a verification of employment. Would it be two pay stubs, or do we only need one now? I didn't keep track of those kinds of things.
Is the quality grade that you would receive during the compensation, evaluation or your performance review, is that the only time you would get information about the first payment defaults and early payment default numbers of your branches, or are those numbers that you would monitor regularly?
Yeah.
Sorry, yes to which?
And... Pardon me?
So you said yes, but yes, you would look at those numbers regularly, or yes, you would.
Well, I'm going to tell you that early payment defaults, first payment defaults, were not a part of the, I know I said earlier they're part of the quality grade. That's not accurate. I only saw first payment, early payment default numbers on a rare basis. That was the two or three times that I described before. The quality grades were actually a result of the quality of the loans that were being delivered for sale or delivered to the company, then repackaged for sale.
And quality was determined how? By the exceptions of documents or by what standard?
Yes, by the number of deficiencies, what would be called a deficiency. And that might be a document that was incomplete, that might, for instance, not be a complete explanation of funds for down payment, or might be a missing pay stub.
Gotcha.
Or those kinds of elements.
Do you recall, for stated income, stated asset loans, which I know Countrywide originated many, do you recall if there was a process in place that tried to gauge whether the stated income was reasonable for the occupation listed in the application?
A process?
Yes.
The process was what we would characterize as reasonability. meaning if someone were to state that they made $8,000 a month and they worked at McDonald's, that would not pass muster, and it would be the responsibility of both the originator and the branch manager to not submit that loan or to suggest to the borrowers that they did not qualify.
So it was more a judgment?
We called it reasonability. Reasonability of the request, the credit request. So, yes, judgment. Common sense.
Mr. Kim, do you? We're just about finished. Do you have? Are you okay as far as time goes? I mean, we're just about ready to wrap up.
Yeah, no, I'm fine.
I think you mentioned that there was one piece of information that you would have to get back to us on.
Yeah, we can get that.
Yeah, it's the name of the JV partner that you.
Yeah. Okay.
Great. I mean, what? This is the kind of question we ask everyone that we interview. You know, what do you feel like led to some of the problems that at the Countrywide experience? You know, end of 07 and 08. What do you think are the reasons behind that?
Well, my perspective is it's not a Countrywide problem; it's an industry problem. That's the first thing I would state. Second thing, and I firmly believe that. Second thing I would state is that when you lower the barriers and continue to push the down payment requirement to low levels of investment, of required down payment and leverage on the part of the borrowers, which the industry, the government, everyone pushed towards. And a strong belief that interest or that real estate properties only increase in value, that's what led to it.
In hindsight, would you have liked to have had some input into the underwriting? To garner your perspective, do you think that that would have been helpful or may have been helpful?
I've never, in all of my years, had that has that been the role of sales? It perhaps should be. But that sword cuts both ways.
Sure.
Do you think in hindsight it would have been valuable to have information about how the mortgages originated by your sales force performed on a regular basis?
Yes.
Did you ever try to get that information?
Yes.
What was the result of that effort?
We had a branch in Bakersfield that was sort of, it was told to me, was high in terms of its overall loan performance, meaning EPDs and FPDs, first payment default. And I got information on that branch, and I, along with the area sales manager, sat down with the branch manager and told them that their job depended upon them improving their overall origination quality to ensure that they get off of that list.
What was the time frame?
That would have been in 2007.
And who told you, who alerted you to the situation with the Bakersfield branch?
The manager complained to senior management that we were too tight, and that they were, that the competition was beating us on our underwriting guidelines. And she went around me and went straight to senior management. And I'm not sure who it was she talked to, because they did not call me. I got a call from the area sales manager relating that story. And so I asked for the detail on the branch, meaning, well, let me put it, actually, let me restate that. As a result of her complaint that we were too tight, I think someone looked into it from senior management and on the servicing side, and they found out that they had high numbers. And as a result of that, I was given that detail, meaning she complained that the marketplace is beating us consistently, and we needed to loosen our credit standards. And we found out that she, along with her branch, was one of the worst perpetrators, or not perpetrators, but one of the worst on the list in terms of EPDs and FPDs. So I had a conversation with her in the area.
What practices did you see when you did your review of that branch? What were some of the, what were the warning, the flags that were raised?
What I observed was a poor communication link between the manager and operations manager.
Did you prepare any?
No, I can't.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, I'm stepping on you. Sorry.
I counseled her to work towards a solid working relationship with open communication with her operations manager.
Well, how is that showing up? You said you saw a lot of EPDs and...
I didn't see the numbers. I was just told that management came back to me and it was relayed to me. And I think it was... trying to remember, it was Tom Hunt, because Dan was the director of sales nationally, and Tom Hunt was the Western divisional manager, and Tom Hunt communicated to me that she had complaints about how rigid things were, and when they looked into it, she's one of the worst in the country, easily within the top 20 branches in the nation. I saw no specific data.
But worse, meaning, can you quantify worse? Worse what?
Worse in terms of first payment, EPD, early payment default, 90 days late. I think there are three categories.
Any other branches within your jurisdiction that would stick out to you?
That we could pick up. Oh, that kind of thing happened?
Yeah.
No.
No.
And after you learned about this mm-hmm. Bakersfield branch, was there any broader inquiry into the Western region that you can remember to see sort of where any of your other branches fell?
No. I guess the best way to describe it is in the past, well, my experience with Countrywide was that when you had a problem with a branch, you would be told.
And you would be told by your direct supervisor, is that so Dave Hansen or
Tom Hunt.
Or it would come from his the operations. It would sort of funnel back up through operations that we had a problem in a branch.
Okay.
Meaning the operations manager would tell the branch manager, and somehow I would get engaged in a conversation with an area or a regional that a branch had been contacted by operations that their numbers were insufficient or poor. And that they needed to improve their quality. Operations.
Well, Mr. Kemp, I think that's all we have. Thank you very much for your time.
Yes, thank you for making yourself available.
You bet.
All right.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks. Have a good day.
Take care. Bye.